Today TV with Cam Edwards.
We all are vetted. We all have BCI checks regularly, and we're not the problem. And I'm afraid that by enforcing gun-free zones, that it's actually going to make our kids more vulnerable to a mass attack.
You've got pro-Second Amendment advocates rallying at the Rhode Island State Capitol in opposition to a gun control bill. Good Wednesday afternoon to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So, Brenda Jacob with the Rhode Island Revolver and Rifle Association, along with dozens of her fellow friends and Second Amendment supporters, out of the Ohio State Capitol, same day that there were dueling rallies, pro-life and pro-choice abortion rallies taking place. But these pro-Second Amendment advocates were objecting to a bill that would change Rhode Island state law and would forbid concealed carry holders from going onto a school ground or within 300 feet of a school with their lawfully carried firearm. The sponsor of this measure says that, she, and tell me if you've heard this before, by the way, she supports the Second Amendment, but this is Representative Grace Diaz, the lead sponsor of the bill, explaining why, even if this does impact the Second Amendment rights of individuals, it doesn't really matter.
Children's supposed to be first in the state. And I know and aware of the Second Amendment, but when you're thinking in Second Amendment versus children, I think everybody will agree that children's come first and the safety is the most important.
Okay, so there's her argument that somehow this is the Second Amendment versus children. Because remember, they want to portray you as caring more about your rights than your kids, right? So this is how she portrays it. It's the Second Amendment versus kids. And of course, if it's the Second Amendment versus kids, well, guess what? The Second Amendment loses, kids win. Now, can Representative Diaz point to any reason why this law should be changed? Why parents, for example, should have to, or concealed carry holders, should have to disarm before they pick up their kids in the drive-through area at school and then drive home unarmed, unable to protect themselves, why they should be handling a firearm when they don't have to? No, she can't point to anything other than she doesn't like the fact that these concealed carry holders can, in fact, carry, and she wants to establish a gun-free zone where one does not exist. So the good news for gun owners is that this bill has not passed out of committee yet. As a matter of fact, it's in the House Judiciary Committee, and right now it's being held for, quote, further study. The session ends later this month, but there is still a chance that this bill could be brought forward. This is not the end of the road for this bill yet. The spokesman for the House Speaker, Nicholas Mattiello, says, quote, all bills are still under consideration until the session adjourns later this month. Meanwhile, we've told you about a number of communities in Rhode Island that have become Second Amendment sanctuary cities or towns. I think we're up to half a dozen or so. Well, down in Tennessee, we now have four counties that have quietly adopted Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. The latest coming from Carter County, where Commissioner Mike Hill explained what this is all about.
We will be, I think, the fourth county in the state of Tennessee to take this issue up. The others are Polk, Blount, and Greene County just passed theirs, I think it was last month. But it's symbolic in recognizing how important the Second Amendment is, and this guarantees adherence, if you will, to the U.S. Constitution as well as the Tennessee Constitution.
Now, one of the other commissioners there in the county, Bob Acuff, said, in his opinion, part of the reason why this resolution is needed is to, quote, guarantee adherence to the U.S. Constitution, as well as the state constitution there. He also referenced a, quote, unquote, red flag bill that was introduced and failed in this last session. He said that it would allow somebody to file a petition for an order of extreme risk protection against another person that could prohibit that person from purchasing a firearm or ammunition, or actually do more than that, would take those firearms away from them without a court hearing. Acuff said, quote, I think many folks are looking at the overreach of some of the federal government, and we've also had that starting to encroach into the Tennessee General Assembly. So again, Carter County becoming the fourth county in the state of Tennessee. I can't even tell you how many counties we're up to now all across the nation in terms of Second Amendment counties, but I do know that there are a lot of them. Now, speaking of sanctuaries, new law in Texas that will allow, signed by Governor Abbott, this will allow for individuals who are concealed carry holders to lawfully carry in church. Yeah, This, by the way, if you're a pastor or, you know, you have a congregation, you don't want them to carry, you can still post your signs saying that firearms are not allowed, but that's what you have to do in order to stop individuals from lawfully carrying there in those houses of worship. Senator Campbell in Texas, who introduced this legislation back in January, said the existing statute is confusing and clunky when it comes to clearly stating the rights of licensed Texans to carry on the premise of a church. This bill provides clarity of the legislature's intent to treat churches in the same manner as other privately owned establishments in the state of Texas. Here to talk about this, very pleased to have with us our friend Tim Bulot joining us on the program, firearms instructor from the great state of Texas. Tim, it's good to see you again, sir.
Oh, Cam, good to see you, my friend.
I appreciate you coming on the program. So, you know, we just read that quote by the sponsor of this bill who said there was existing language, right, in the state of Texas that theoretically allowed for this to happen. But the senator says this was clunky. It could have been vague and confusing. This spells it out very clearly.
Right. Before the bill, it was optional, pretty much like it still is, but it's just been clarified. The law strictly prohibited it, but it said if there was a ruling from the DA, which we had, that it would be allowed by the church, it would be okay. All right. And so we went for 2 years under that ruling. And now this basically flips it around the other way. It says it's okay, just like any other establishment. And the church needs to post under the 30-06 and the 30-07 rule. The 07 is for open carry and the 06 is for concealed carry if they want to exclude it. So, you know, it's important to get that out front first. It can still be excluded, but that's up to the individual churches now.
Okay. You know, Tim, and I mean, as a firearms instructor, somebody who deals a lot with security issues, I imagine that over the years, you've probably had a pastor or two, you know, get some instruction from you. How common is it? And do you think it's becoming more common for places of worship there in Texas to either allow for concealed carry or to even have at, you know, that security plan in place that relies on, at least in part, armed parishioners?
Right. So we've trained quite a few church security teams over the years, and some of them we've trained to the level of SWAT teams because some churches take their security that serious. So, Cam, basically we've got three levels of church carry here in Texas now. The lowest level is the one that we're talking about at the moment, which just allows the everyday parishioner to carry in church with their family as long as it's okay with the church, in accordance with Texas state law on the license to carry. Okay, so we've got that. And then next, as of 2017, our Texas Occupations Code was amended, and that allows for churches to have voluntary armed security. And the key word is voluntary armed security without paying licensing fees through the state of Texas through the Private Security Bureau. Okay, so and it's kind of a gray area there. What exactly defines security and what doesn't? Which brings us to the highest level is having full on-out security teams, and these are teams that have, you know, they have written SOPs and general orders. They may wear clothing that identifies them as security, and it's a known fact to the congregation and to the community that they are armed security in that church. Those, according to the Texas Occupation Code, still have to register with the Private Security Bureau in order to function as known security teams in the church, in which a lot of them have. The larger churches, the more well-funded churches, have security react teams that are, you know, they train just like other corporate security teams do on a regular basis. So we've got all three of those levels covered now.
So what's your take on this new law that clarifies what's allowed in Texas houses of worship?
It takes out the gray area on the license to carry side. I wish other states would look and follow our example. I don't think that it's a you know, it's an end all be all to the problem, but we haven't, since we had the big shooting near San Antonio, we haven't had any more church shootings down here. The word is out. around the state that people carry in our churches now. And it's also out that the majority of these churches have some kind of a security plan in place. You know, Cam, like with everything else, it's just another step in a series of steps. You know, the churches still need to look at technical security. They still need to look at physical security, and they still need to be on basically a soft lockdown during their service and have certain people that are watching and are assigned to certain areas and try to prevent this before it happens, as well as doing some counter surveillance on the inside. So it's just another step, but it's definitely in the right direction.
You know, and to get back to the some of those aspects of church security that you just mentioned, how difficult is it for those smaller churches? I mean, as you say, if you got a big mega church, right, and you've got, you know, 10,000 people in there on a Sunday, chances are, again, you've got that, you know, pretty big security team. You've probably got cameras in place. But if you are the pastor in a, you know, small town in Texas, and it may be 50, 60 people there on a Sunday morning, how easy is it to adopt some of those tactics that you just mentioned?
Well, the biggest thing is that the individuals have to remove themselves from the worship service during the critical times. If they're, you know, focused on the worship service, which and that's kind of I get this a lot, because a lot of them, they think that just carrying and being involved in the worship and having their pistol in church, that's enough. If you're focused on the worship service and something does go down, you know, where's your mindset at the time? Okay, how's your reaction cycle going to be? Because you're not thinking security, you're not thinking protection. You're focused on, you know, the word being delivered by the minister. So for the smaller churches, they just have to get it understood that if they're going to be there to provide some type of security, they've got to remove themselves from that, and they've got to start looking at the situation from the outside in, because, you know, the majority of these shooters walked right in during service. Okay, doesn't say that, yeah. They, you know, there's a couple of them that have infiltrated, but the majority have walked in from the outside, and if that's how they're going to enter, that's where they need to be stopped before they get through that front door. So that's the first step to it right there.
Tim Bullitt with the Strategic Weapons Academy of Texas. As always, sir, it is good talking with you. Thank you so much for your expertise, and I look forward to doing this again very soon.
It's good to be back, Cam. You take care now.
All right, you too, sir. Tim Bullitt joins here on Cam and Company. All right, so we are edging ever closer to this special session coming up on July the 9th in Richmond, Virginia. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam calling lawmakers back into session, telling them, urging them, because he can't really tell them what to do, but he's urging them to consider a bunch of gun control measures that were already considered and already voted down. We've talked about this before. I got to tell you, I mean, here in Virginia, this story nationally, not getting a lot of attention. Locally, this continues to be this week. Days after Governor Northam called this special session into being, this continues to be a very hot-button issue. And up in Northern Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. media market, you can imagine some of what we're hearing. So WJLA, now I want to note, this is a commentary segment on WJLA. This was not presented as straight news. I was still just kind of blown away by this. Amisha Cross, who's one of the commentators there for WJLA, taking almost verbatim the language from leading anti-gun groups and urging lawmakers in Virginia to pass what she calls, quote unquote, common sense gun safety measures.
We can no longer allow the gun rights lobby to control the narrative and delay gun control legislation that could save lives. Let's get to the point. The right has allowed the gun rights lobby to supersede American safety and security long enough. Virginia has strong gun reform bills on the table. Republicans need to put their thoughts and prayers to work in advancing the legislation.
Yeah, did you notice, by the way, a shocking lack of specificity there? I did, too. I could have shared that entire, like, minute-long, 90-second-long commentary. There was no specificity by the commentator, Amisha Cross. But let's kind of talk about a couple of things here. So first of all, the quote-unquote gun rights lobby. she says has controlled the narrative for too long. I don't know for how long that would be. But I don't even know if Ms. Cross is aware of this. You know, violent crime in this country, let's say the gun rights lobby has controlled the narrative for, I don't know, 30 years, right? Three decades. Let's go back, look at the crime rate 30 years ago compared to what it is today. It's a lot lower today than what it was 30 years ago, supposedly when the gun lobby began running roughshod over our nation's laws. As a matter of fact, I mean, we are at historic low levels of violent crime in this country, which, by the way, Ms. Cross's fellow employees in the media don't ever talk about. You know, poll after poll of Americans show most Americans believe that violent crime is going up, not down. And when you've got candidates out there like Cory Booker talking about how he's going to, quote unquote, end the epidemic of gun violence when violent crime has been declining and no media outlet ever calls him out on it. Heck, Jake Tapper, you might ask, you know, okay, well, what specific policy would have prevented these attacks? But that's about as tough a question as any of these candidates are going to get. I think the media, frankly, is misleading their audience in many ways. And again, when you've got these commentators offering up these vague proposals, well, all we got to do is put these gun laws on the books, and you know what, everything gets better. I think that they are not serving their audience very well. So yesterday, I think I offered Charles Blow of the New York Times a chance to come on and talk about what he thinks would actually work. I'm going to do the same for Ms. Cross from WJLA. Now, I don't know if they'll let her come on the program, but I would love to have a sit-down conversation, really get into some of the nitty-gritty details about what she thinks could work here in Virginia that will be, well, that may be debated in the special session coming up next month. Again, you've got Republican Speaker of the House there saying that he doesn't think any of those gun control bills are going to be up for debate. They've got another direction that they want to take in terms of improving public safety. Speaking of another direction in improving public safety, a law signed by Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, I think, is definitely going to improve the safety of first responders. This will now allow medics to carry when they are responding to shootings, drug raids, and other, quote-unquote, high-risk situations. And the deputy chief in the Martin County Fire Rescue, Kevin Herndon, spoke with WPTV in Florida recently about the need for this legislation.
Their primary focus is to treat victims, but this partnership adds an extra layer of defense.
Because of the environment that they're in, potentially they might have to protect themselves, fellow officers, or the civilians that they're treating.
So this takes effect July the 1st. This is, I think, going to be fairly commonplace throughout the state of Florida. WPTV notes that there are already similar training programs underway in Indian River, St. Lucie, and Palm Beach counties in Florida. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times these first responders, they may get there before there's a law enforcement presence on the scene. And they have been attacked at times. And so, again, this is going to provide another layer of security. It doesn't turn these paramedics and first responders into law enforcement officers, but it does allow them to protect themselves if they need to while they are on the job. Now, if you live in the state of New Jersey, the state doesn't think that you should be able to protect yourself in your own home, much less out in the street. And you might think that they've got every gun control law under the sun already on the books in New Jersey. Well, you would be wrong, because tomorrow there are going to be hearings in Trenton for a whole bunch more gun laws that they want to put on the books. Join us to talk about it right now from the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs. Executive Director Scott Bach is with us on the program. Scott, how are you, sir?
Cam, great to be back, and it's crazy as usual in the Garden State.
It really is. All right, so we've got a number of bills here that are coming up on Thursday's agenda. Assembly Bill 1016, this is their attempt at revising New Jersey's smart gun law. This would require gun shops to sell smart guns. It would not require them to only sell smart guns, but as soon as a smart gun comes on the market, that's all that they've got to put that in their store, right? They have to sell it.
Yes, but there's a larger narrative. What this is intended to replace is the failed 2002 smart gun law, the first of its kind in the nation, that tipped the anti-gunner's hand. It basically said once there's one smart gun available for sale, every conventional handgun ever made is banned and you can no longer buy or sell it. You can only buy a smart gun. And so that signaled to gun owners that this technology would be co-opted by anti-gunners, and so gun owners weren't interested in it. So the person who brought this bill in 2002, the infamous Senator Loretta Weinberg, we've discussed her before on air, is blamed nationally for jumping the gun, no pun intended. So their solution to the problem is, well, we'll roll back the mandate part just long enough to compel every gun dealer to carry one smart gun, just one smart gun. Listen, the obvious play here is Loretta Weinberg, Senator Weinberg, is being blamed for the lack of progress on smart guns nationwide. She's under pressure. So we have said to them, and I'll say to them tomorrow during testimony, if they want to see smart guns develop, they just need to go away and keep their hands off. The more, whatever they try to do, whenever they try to force implementation of the technology at any level, they're just pushing gun owners away. It guarantees the failure of the failure of acceptance of that technology. They just don't learn, Cam. And that's one of six bills that we'll be opposing tomorrow. Just one of six.
And you know, it's fascinating, Scott. Yeah, and I want to get to a couple more of these, but it's fascinating because on yesterday's program, we just talked about this paper published by Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University looking at smart guns. And their researchers are concerned that, you know, as it turns out, the people who are really most interested in smart guns are people who are already, you know, practicing safe storage requirements and things of that nature. They're worried that if a smart gun comes to market, it can actually encourage people who are not gun owners now to become gun owners. And of course, that's the last thing that gun control advocates want. They want fewer guns out there, fewer gun owners. So now you've got some hemming and hawing over on the anti-gun side about, well, do we really want to push these smart guns at all? Which I think is kind of fascinating. We'll see if that rears up at all in tomorrow's hearings. All right, so we've got a couple minutes left. Tell me what other bills, as you said, you got six of them. Bill that the gun owners really need to be aware of and really need to be wary of?
Well, one is requiring renewal of the firearms ID card every 4 years. Most people know most states don't have a firearms ID card. In New Jersey, you get one after jumping through incredible hoops and waiting a long time, and they're good for life to purchase and possess long guns. They want to do renewals, and they want to do mandatory training in order to purchase firearms. So you can, we're not talking about carry, not taking a course, you know, in order to get your CCW. We're saying before you can buy a handgun or a firearm, you've got to have training. Now, of course, we're all for training, but laws.
Sure.
Listen, if the law tried to say, I don't have to take a public speaking course in order to speak in public, right? You shouldn't have to take a course in order to own firearms. There are people who own them for investment purposes. There are people who don't use them. They just own them for investment or because they like them. You shouldn't have to, you know, have mandatory training. Now, should the government incentivize training, give people a reason, a positive reason to want to get training? Yeah, of course. Nobody's opposed to training. We're just opposed to laws that say you can't exercise a fundamental right until you jump through this hoop set up by the government. This idea of firearms ID card renewal is also pretty outrageous, because who is going to be made safer by that? Okay, I mean, you know, the only people affected by that are the good guys, the people that follow the rules or try to follow the crazy rules and laws that we have in New Jersey. So who is made safer by requiring four-year renewal? You know, why not do it like some other states approach carry, which is instead of you jumping through hoops, the government sweeps the criminal database against permit holders and revokes privileges of those, you know, where there's a positive hit. Why put the burden, the cost, the expense, the trouble, the extensive delays in New Jersey and the fees on the gun owner?
The answer to this, Scott, and it's because they still don't believe that it's a right. And they don't treat it as a right. They treat it as a privilege. And, you know, going back to the training requirements, I'm with you, by the way. I'm all in favor of training, but I'm not in favor of training mandates. And it's not like these anti-gun lawmakers are going to ensure that there's, you know, training facilities available in every county or borough in New York, in the state of New Jersey, right? I mean, you may have to travel a couple of hours to get to a place where you can obtain that training, again, at a price before you can exercise your constitutional rights. So you got six of these bills, Scott. We've got about 30 seconds left here. What's your advice to New Jersey gun owners? Obviously, if they show up in Trenton tomorrow, can they testify?
Yes, anybody can testify. I think they're going to limit the time. But listen, even though the legislature is stacked against us, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be speaking out. There are good reasons to do that. Gun owners need to stay strong through these difficult times, and we're going to fight. And what we lose, we'll take up in court, but we're never giving up. We're going to fight and shine the light of truth on these ridiculous proposals, Cam.
Thank you for everything you're doing there in the state of New Jersey, Scott. I know that gun owners are going to be well represented there in Trenton, but again, the more the merrier out there. Scott Bach, Executive Director of the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs. We'll have more, by the way, on those hearings coming up later in the week here on Cam and Company. Let's get to today's Hero of the Day and then our Good Guy of the Day. Hero of the Day from Shawnee, Kansas, Overland Park, Kansas, actually, the Shawnee Mission Post. Reporting that a man is dead after police say he attempted to rob a Boost Mobile store Monday evening. This was about 7:45 in the evening. Reports of shots fired inside the store. Officer John Lacey told me at the scene, right now we're looking at an attempted robbery. Says the suspect apparently entered the store armed with a gun, demanded phones, and then when the suspect jumped the counter, the store manager there pulled out his firearm and fired a single shot, hitting the suspect. The officer said, we're going to review the videotape. The cameras don't lie. There was a woman apparently in the area who was with the male suspect, according to police. She allegedly approached the store after the store manager had shot the male. She then locked the business door, or after the store manager, I guess, locked the business door and called 911. Police cordoned off the area. Officer Lacey said, we're talking to the store manager, trying to find what occurred here. Again, at last report, looks like a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. They're in Overland Park, Kansas, and that store manager, our hero of the day, will give any details as they become available. Our good guy of the day brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher from Belmont County, Ohio. This is pretty incredible, and it's amazing this was actually, you know, caught on tape. June 7th, so last Friday, Julie Webb, that's Julie, and her grandson, Grayson, is in that stroller that just went down an embankment and into a pond. Yeah. Julie says, I let go of the stroller for a second, and the next thing I knew, the front wheels just turned, and he was going. Went into the bank, or went into the lake there. Julie Webb chased after the stroller. She got trapped herself. She said, I was so afraid that nobody was going to be able to hear me. I just kept screaming for help, somebody help. On the other side of the lake, Andrew Stewart, who's an off-duty police officer from Barnesville, Ohio, hears those cries for help. He paddles to shore. He ran to help. It was his truck's dash cam, actually, that captured this footage just because of where he was parked. He said, even with a law enforcement career, it was some of the scariest calls for help that I've ever heard in my life. He found the baby Grayson in the stroller, upside down, by the way, was able to pull Grayson to safety, then rescued grandmother Julie Webb. He said, I just had to reassure her that she needed to grab my hand, and I was not going to let go. He says she trusted me. We made our way up the embankment. By that time, others had arrived to help them up the hill. Julie Webb and Grayson are okay. And yesterday, they got to have a bit of a reunion. She said, I just want to thank Andrew for being in the right place at the right time. And the others, too, who were all over the lake and just came running. So there you go. Officer Andrew Stewart, again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We thank you, sir, for being one of the many good guys out there. That's going to do it for this edition of Cam and Company, brought to you by our friends at Hornady. We will see you back here tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern, for another edition right here on NRA TV with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. Stick around. Relentless with Dana Lash is coming up right after this.